Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan. I have Mikey and John joining me to recap the 31-0 win over Chattanooga on Thursday night. Before we get into that, Mikey, Hall of Famer, say some words of encouragement to the people. Neuqua Valley honoring you as a, an athletic department Hall of Famer?
Yeah, so I actually found out this news back in May or April, that I was selected to be in my high school's Hall of Fame. So they announced it today to the public, and the ceremony is this coming Friday. So it's and I'm actually speaking to the team before the game.
Oh yeah.
So we'll see if I can come up with any, you know, words of wisdom for them. But no, it's cool to be, you know, recognized for something, you know, especially like that. And, you know, obviously my family's super pumped up, you know, looking forward to it. It'll be a good night. And, you know, I don't know if I get like a gold jacket or anything, but if I do, I will be sure to post a picture of it.
Just a big statue outside the high school, like the Dick Butkus one.
Yeah. Or try to get the field named after me. I got to do something to, you know, leave a legacy there.
You got to open up the wallet first if you want the field named after you, I think.
Yeah. No, our field is named after like our old athletic director. So I don't know.
Ah.
Yeah.
Also that catch the football account, Neuqua Valley High School football account posted. Is that, where does that rank in your pantheon of catches all time?
It's definitely the best catch I've ever had.
That's what they're making the statue out of.
Yeah, no, the angle, if you could see the end zone clip of that, you would see why I think it's the best. Because the field side frame, like, you can see me like diving and, you know, going for the ball, but
right
when it's the other view, you could see that it's like one hand, and I just like David Tyree like stuck it to my helmet. So it was a good play.
I saw it on YouTube with both angles. I went and looked it up. It has 100,000 views on YouTube now. I think it went like semi-viral at the time.
You know why it did? I don't know that I've ever told you this. It actually made Yahoo's World News homepage.
What?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I know. It was like high school receiver makes ridiculous catch. And next thing I know, it had like 90,000 views.
That's sweet.
Holy crap. That's amazing.
Yeah.
We won't talk about the outcome of that game because I saw that in the caption from the Yahoo News post at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty funny just how it read. I wish I might have to go find it real quick. Hold on.
Well, I could probably tell you how it ended. We were tied like 28-28 and a half, and we ended up losing like
58-32 or something.
Yeah. Well, not 32, like probably 35.
It said that something along the lines of like the last line of the article. It said Naperville Central went on to win the game, but Dudek and his teammates had at least something positive to write home about.
Yeah. No, that was a good team. They ended up winning state that year. So quality program.
Favorite part of the video is that kid number 6 at the end, just waving his hand saying no catch, no catch. And then they call it a catch and he's just like, what? How?
Yeah, no, I don't know how I caught it. But if you are listening to this, I would encourage you to go look at the end zone clip of it.
Mikey's self-ranked favorite catch of all time.
We'll definitely have to
favorite catch out. Or best catch or both?
Best catch.
What's your favorite catch?
My favorite catch is freshman year I scored a touchdown against Northwestern. And the reason why it was my favorite catch was because I had like, because it was the Thanksgiving game. So I had like 30 family members there and they're all sitting in the end zone where I caught it. So
Got it. That
is something I'll never forget.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool.
Speaking of receivers who've had a game, back to Chattanooga, Pat Bryant, I think probably, I mean, would you both agree he was the star of the game?
Yes, certainly. I thought he played extremely well. I mean, the one touchdown that he got called back was ridiculous. And I thought Tommy DeVito played really well too. I thought he had some good throws. But Pat Bryant, you know, we talked about this season, you know, in our preseason, you know, outlook on the year, we need to find a reliable number two receiver. And, you know, I think, you know, after last week, it's pretty obvious that Pat Bryant has, you know, assumed that role. And that only helps our offense going forward, you know, to have another guy that can make plays outside of Isaiah.
Yeah, and Isaiah himself didn't do too poorly either. It was nice seeing him turn that one into a touchdown because his yards per catch average was 3.6 or something like that, because he was just catching all those little pop passes and not really breaking any. So that was good to see. But it is nice, even just honestly, for the long term outlook of the program too, because obviously Pat Bryant is going to be here next year as well, and it's just nice to see that this is kind of besides the point, but even in recruiting, this is kind of one of my concerns with the Tony Peterson offense and even going out and trying to attract transfer quarterbacks or wide receivers in high school or whatever. Looking at that offense last year, you'd be I don't really know if this is going to be the thing that sells Illinois as an offensive juggernaut. And then you see a guy like Pat Bryant emerge and have a great game like that he can hopefully build on for the rest of the year. And that's something where you can say, okay, this is it's not just the Isaiah Williams and Chase Brown show. And that's amazing, because we haven't, you know, really been able to say that for the past couple of years in terms of having a multi-headed attack. And so I really like that in terms of the long-term view of what was an outstanding game.
Mike, you mentioned the 75-yard Pat Bryant touchdown that got called back. Thoughts on the holding call there?
I mean, it was holding, I thought, when I saw the replay. I know you guys were at the game, so it's a little different. But when they were slowing it down, I thought it was for sure holding. But
yeah,
it sounds like you have a different opinion on that.
No, I wasn't 100% sure. I didn't see the flag. John and I, like you said, were at the game sitting with Robert. Robert broke both of our hands before we realized it was a flag. He gave one of his mightiest high fives for that play.
The greatest high five that never counted.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But seeing the call back, I thought upon, you know, reviewing the replay, it probably was just because he got that hand on the guy's back and kind of grasped the jersey just enough, but it was close. Mm-hmm. And then someone had said during the game, had texted us and said it might have not been called a touchdown even if the holding didn't count, because someone thought he might have stepped on the out-of-bounds line when he was running down the sideline. But looking back at that, that also looked very close, so I don't know if they would have had conclusive evidence on that. So, but then Pat Bryant turned it around. That kind of broken play, he just went deep. I don't know if it was the very next play or a couple plays later, caught one, and then he had a deep slant he caught right after that, and then he called to the sideline to get out of there because he'd just run for 200 yards back and forth between the called back touchdown and the next couple catches he had. So it was kind of the Pat Bryant drive, and I think that was kind of his breakout moment, hopefully, going forward.
Yeah, I thought he looked solid. I thought he looked confident. Again, it was against, you know, an FCS opponent.
Right.
But, you know, as I've mentioned before, you know, the biggest difference is the offense and defensive line. You know, the skill players are, you know, maybe a tenth slower on their 40, you know, an inch too short as to why they were overlooked for, you know, an FBS team. So, you know, thought he looked great, you know, regardless of what it might look like on paper as who the competition was.
I think that's my favorite part about Pat Bryant is his effortlessness and fluidity when he runs his routes. He loves that, you know, either long slant or quick post, whatever you want to call it, where it's just, you know, five steps and then he's hitting the backside post. It just looks so nice because he's usually got 3 to 5 yards of separation from the DB. And I mean, yeah, you could say that the quality of the opponent might not have been the best, but I'm curious to see how he'll do come Big Ten play, if he can still stack that up.
So we mentioned Pat Bryant over 100 yards. Isaiah over 100 yards, and Chase Brown went over 100 yards again. First time, I think, did they say in Illinois history that we had three guys go for over 100 yards?
Yep. I think that was the first time we had two receivers over 100 and a running back over 100.
And I didn't even think it was Chase Brown's best game, and yet
he
makes 108 yards or whatever it was look so easy. And the offensive line, again, they weren't necessarily dominating in the trenches this game either, but, you know, to put up that easy of a stat line and just cruise to a comfortable win, you got to feel pretty good about it regardless of, you know, what went down in the trenches.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, what our program needs to, you know, especially as fans, like to start expecting out of us, you know, a dominant win against a lesser opponent. You know, in years in the past, you know, it wasn't always like that. You know, each week we're, you know, winning. If we do win, you know, we're winning in the fourth quarter. It's a tight game. Definitely, you know, more enjoyable to watch. But, you know, we've talked about taking those strides and bringing this program to the next level. This, you know, is definitely a pillar in that, you know, is showing up and playing to your level of football versus the level of your opponent.
Yeah, it's nice being able to have a game like that where, like, yeah, you can nitpick, like, the O-line maybe not looking as dominant as you like, and that being a potential cause for concern, or some of the missed tackling that led to some larger runs for Chattanooga. Like, but it's nice to be able to do that under the, like, guise of, we still went out there and absolutely dominated them. Like, yeah, you can take those points and look to them for the future, but it wasn't like we were sweating out, like, a 17-14, like, last-second field goal that we had to make to beat Chattanooga, and then you're thinking of, like, larger issues. It's like, no, this is how this should look. You know, there's still things to correct on the, you know, ascension path that this team is hopefully on, but that was amazing just to have. I honestly don't know if I've had, like, a more stress-free, and maybe it's because we were at the game, Danny, but, like, I don't know if I've ever had just, like, that stress-free, like, a watch of any sport in my life. That was just so nice. It was just like, oh yeah, we're just here, you know, watching the boys go and play. They're going out and dominating. This is sweet.
Yeah, it felt pretty comfortable the whole way. So I, you know, can't complain. Again, it's Chattanooga, so you're expected to win by, what'd we say, 18 points, and you win by 31. Post game win expectancy is like 100%. So that goes to show that it was kind of a cruise control W. And then, you know, we have a gauntlet coming up, so it's good to get that third win and the non-conference season undefeated. Now we got to jump back to Big Ten play here and see where it leads us. But expectations now going forward, I mean, John, you and I had talked about it a little bit on our way home. Where do you see, you know, Illinois' win-loss record now that you've kind of evaluated the first four games here, and, you know, have your expectations changed?
Well, I, you know, I think, like you said, these next 3 weeks are better opponents than, you know, we faced the first 4 weeks of the season. So I don't want to give a prediction on the rest of the year, but, you know, after these three games, we'll know what type of team we have. You know, just, I want to see them come out and compete. Don't want any blowouts, obviously. And, you know, obviously, most importantly, want to get the win. But it's important too that, you know, we can show that we can hang with, you know, the big dogs in the Big Ten, especially the Big Ten West.
Yeah, I think it's a nice reframing of our season expectations in terms of how, like, going undefeated in the non-conference is great. And I think that should, you know, hopefully be the expectation going forward as this program raises its floor. I think now that, you know, 3-1 after 4 weeks, I know preseason we talked, and I think this is maybe under the suspicion, or not the suspicion, but the pretense of, like, going 2-2 in those first couple games. Like, okay, four wins wouldn't be great, but would be acceptable under the, hopefully there's a growth, and you know that Bielema was the guy for the long run. Now my, like, expectations have shifted to, okay, four wins is honestly, like, a disappointment, because there shouldn't just be one more win if you want to be a good team going forward. Like, you can't, you know, have all this momentum in the early part of the season and then just absolutely let it, you know, collapse. And I don't think it will. In my personal opinion, like, they should get to a bowl game. Like, that is where I'm projecting the season to go, is six wins. And yes, I know that we're heading into the gauntlet of the Big Ten schedule, but I still think that just based on last year and seeing how Brett gets the guys up for, you know, not even some random games, but just when you might think that there could be something where we're not favored, could be even this week. You know, they're going to find a way to surprise and get a couple upsets. And, you know, I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, I think it's definitely shifted my expectations in terms of how this season is going to ultimately play out.
after getting a feel for some of the other Big Ten teams we'll be facing down the stretch, are there any, you know, this might be getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, are there any teams you look at and you say, okay, you know, they're looking pretty beatable now, that you'd put on your radar as maybe a W down the line?
I think certainly Iowa.
Yep.
You know, just, I mean, I haven't watched much of them, but, you know, what I have watched, you know, it's a team where, you know, they're not going to beat themselves. So if you put up points on them, you know, you're going to come away with the win, because their offense is not very good.
That's very nice of you to say, Mikey.
Yeah. Well, I say that and then watch them put up like 60 points against us. So
true.
But that's the one team where we've just always struggled against Iowa. But this year I feel like could, you know, be our year.
Yeah. I feel like Iowa for sure. Michigan State has not, I just like don't have, actually both teams. I was saying this to Danny while we were walking to and from the game, in terms of this past weekend, Michigan State and Minnesota playing each other. And I was kind of like, this is just going to be a game to see who I respect a little bit more, but don't have like the full, like, I'm not giving that other team a win just because we've had recent success against Minnesota. Michigan State, it doesn't really scare me in terms of just like, I know this is like kind of, I don't know, it doesn't really make sense, but I'm just like, there are programs that I'm scared of, or like don't chalk up a win. Like Wisconsin, I'll never give us a win just because like they've owned us, say, for like a couple, you know, one-off occasions in recent history. Iowa's kind of the same, except for this year. It's like they are so absurdly bad on offense that I'm like, okay, maybe I'll give ourselves like a 50% chance at winning. Michigan State and Minnesota just haven't had that sheer dominance over us where I'm like, oh yeah, they're churning guys in and out. Their development is, you know, at such a high level that we're not going to be able to compete with them type thing, like the Wisconsin and Iowa's have been in the past. So I'm not like, you know, saying we're going to go out there and blow their doors, but it's definitely something where, I don't know, I'm not seeing Michigan State as this like huge threat where everyone thought they were going to be like winning the Big Ten East or something like that.
Yeah, there are a couple teams that we certainly won't be favored against, but you know, you look at teams like Northwestern and I don't know, Nebraska still on the schedule that we may just be favored in those games, or I presume we will be just based off what we've seen so far this season. So, you know, getting to that 3-win mark, yeah, you start counting down those next 3 wins to get you to a bowl game. And I mean, that's more than a successful season, I would say, if we could get to that. But I don't want to put the cart too far ahead of the horse.
Agreed.
So back to Chattanooga, defensive side of the ball. A shutout, as predicted by yours truly on the podcast. I was a little bit nervous when they got in the red zone. That one play was the long run. Someone missed the tackle in the hole, but I think Quan and Seth Coleman chased him all the way down and tackled the dude at like the 20-yard line. And the very next play, Gay Bacchus got pressure. Quan Martin picked it off in the end zone and kept hope alive for the shutout. I will say there was one other point where I was nervous, and that was after Chattanooga pinned us down at the 1-yard line, and we ran like, I think, was Art Sikowski in the game at that point? We ran the ball a couple times and barely got it. Like Chase Brown was wrapped up in the end zone and squirted his way back to the one. We were able to get a punt off back to midfield. So I would have been ultra devastated if the shutout went down due to like a safety. That would have been pretty brutal. But defense has been balling out. I mean, I think we're now a top 10 defense by most metrics, you know, in the country. And most of the other teams in the top 10 seem to be in the Big Ten West as well. I think we're just like you said, Iowa's offense is so bad, but their defense is, I think, number one in the country. Minnesota's up there. Wisconsin's got a pretty good defense. So there's some really good defenses, but look no further than the boys in Champaign, because we have one of the best defenses I can recall.
Yeah. I mean, defense, all three phases of it, you know, looked really well. You know, Quan Martin, that interception, Dan, you just talked about it. The way he went up and high pointed that ball was incredible. I mean, he looked like an NFL DB out there. And Little Spoon, they don't even throw to Little Spoon anymore.
Yeah.
So that shows you the type of impact he's having. Where you essentially eliminate a half of the field. But, you know, overall we got pressure. Keith Randolph and Johnny Newton, you know, the boys up front played well. You know, it's coming together. You know, we'll see though against Wisconsin, you know, what type of team this is, because we know Wisconsin, they're gonna try to man up and run it down our throats. So, you know, it'll be a good test for us.
Yeah, I mean, not really much more to add to that. I guess, like, I'm just really happy that they got meaningful, like, confidence-inducing reps for guys like Gabe Akkus, who obviously we know is going to start probably from here on out. But, like, you know, if Alec Bryant isn't necessarily developing on the curvature that they want to this point, then he's going to be relied upon heavily. And, you know, him having a dominant game like that is only means good things for, you know, his confidence going forward. Even getting guys like Matt Bailey and Kanenna Otoluga, you know, 10 snaps out there and live reps is good for them just to continue to build those reps and gain confidence too. So it's just like, I mean, what else can you say? They just don't give up touchdowns in Champaign.
I wanted to highlight two things. One, Calvin Avery is becoming more and more of a monster with every game. And it's good to see a kind of a senior breakthrough from him. And then we got to talk about Keith Randolph's interception, right?
Yeah. I was laughing at that, Dan, because I think you, what did you say the over under was on
the big man touchdown?
Man touchdown. We said talking about that.
We said over under 1.5 touchdown. So would we get a big man touchdown this year? And I think we set the weight limit to like 265 or 270 plus for the weight class.
Something like that.
So he would have qualified for the big man. I thought the same thing, Mikey. So I'm glad you pointed that out. But it's always funny.
That was the first thing I thought of. Yeah.
It's always funny when you see the big man rumbling. And what a play by that quarterback to get there and punch that ball out. That was a heck of an effort, because I don't think anyone was getting to Keith Randolph if that QB didn't get the punch.
No. I mean, it was – I saw it all along. You know, you could just see the quarterback come in. And quarterbacks are smart players. He's not going for the tackle. He's going for the ball. And Keith is probably the first time he's ran with a ball since, you know, middle school. So not much experience there. Just, you know, ball security, man. It's the name of the game.
High and tight.
Yep.
All right. What else we got?
Hugh Robertson kind of needs to still figure it out.
Yeah, he shanked that one. He did have the one out of the end zone that got to the 50, which was a nice recovery. But yeah, can't be shanking punts like that. What was it, a 12-yard punt or something this week?
Mm-hmm.
That might be a man-up button right there for Hugh Robertson.
It's time to...
Yeah, they got to figure that out, because, you know, in a close game, that'll really, really hurt us, you know. And it's, I mean, I get if, you know, there's pressure or something, but when you're standing back there and punting from our 30, like, there's no excuse for it to go 12 yards.
Yeah, that's essentially a turnover.
Yeah, like, you might as well, you know, go for it and throw a deep pass, and if it gets picked off, it's better than a punt, you know. Like, so they, as we, you know, get into this stretch here, it's going to be important that we clean that up. And also, you know, Caleb cleans up some of his kicks. I know he didn't miss any this week, but the week before was a little rough. So special teams gotta man up and tighten up, because we're gonna need them. You know, they contribute to games in big fashion. So,
Mike, you didn't get to experience it, but I will say it was a bit chilly at the game weather-wise. So, you know, that football weather's basically here. We're starting to get a few of those days around here where the shoulder pads crack a little louder. I'm excited about it. I don't know if you have those same feelings.
Yeah, no, I love a, you know, brisk fall afternoon, get to watch football. You know, used to enjoy playing in that weather too, because when it's just hot as all can be all, it's, you know, it's tough. But it's you know, a few years from now when USC and UCLA join, we'll definitely be able to use this weather to our advantage. But I think every other team's used to it just like we are.
You know how they always say it's like 10 to 15 degrees hotter on the field? Is that only in the summertime when like the sun's beating out, or is a day game in like October where it's 50 degrees out, let's say, but the sun's still out, Is it still warmer on the field like that or not? Does that not necessarily apply as much?
That I do not know. I'm not sure there.
I remember at least, you know, and this is just anecdotal evidence, but I remember some cold like November days where it's like Saturday mornings, but you'd get that as long as you get the sun on the rubber, you could still see like the heat emanating. So it'd be like a little bit more bearable. But I mean, that's also, Jesus, almost like 10 years ago at this point. So maybe the field technology has changed to not make it so volatile in terms of the temperature changes, but that would be kind of nice in terms of if you just get a little sun on it during the day and then the field's a little bit warmer for you.
At what temperature do they bring out those giant turbine heaters for the sideline? What's like the cutoff for those?
Oh, I don't know if there's like a cutoff. I think if it's just cold, I mean, I would say anything like, well, no, what I mean by
no
that.
No, duh,
is
Mikey,
like,
come on.
No, but like what I mean.
What's cold though? What's football guy cold?
Yeah, I would say anything under like 45, but like if it's like 42 or if it's like 46, they might still bring them out. You know, I don't think it's like a hard, I think it's just if the players want them, they'll bring them out.
Same goes for those helmet warmers.
Yeah, I think it's just all on one connector. Like I think they're connected to the bench.
Got it. That's got to be an expensive bench.
Yeah. They're expensive, and we didn't have them for like my first few years playing, and then they finally invested in them because they're nice, and they got like the pads up front, so there's like 3 feet of like a pad, then the bench. In the pad, there's like a bunch of little holes in it that shoots out heat. It's just like
that's huge,
incredible.
I would tell coach I was winded and had to sit out the play.
Yeah, they're a little too comfortable. Yeah.
So we'll be back later in the week to preview the Wisconsin matchup, but we'll leave it at that for now. You can check us out online. We're at The Field Pass on social media. We appreciate you all for listening. Thank you, and go Illini.